I really hope that you are enjoying this continued reading of the good news about Jesus. The last quarter, if you're a guest with us, let me recap really quickly. The last quarter, which was January, February, March, we went at a very slow and deliberate pace through the good news account of John. And in that, we looked at Jesus' public declaration of himself as co-equal with the God of the Bible, the God of the Old Testament, the God who is creator, the God who is God of all authority. Jesus came saying openly, I am the co-equal, full representation of that God so that you might know him. And it stirred a lot of contention for people. Jesus did not hide what his message was. But now as we're in the book of Mark, we are moving beyond the statements of Jesus, the word of Jesus, to the works of Jesus. And in the works of Jesus that Daniel began into last week, where he said, man, this is an action-packed, Ryan was talking about it, as an action-packed book, that this is a book that you just see over and over and over again, Jesus' physical declaration of this authority that he verbally confirmed. And it's this passage that we're going to look at here, we'll actually come to the reading of towards the end of next week, or this week coming. But I'm enjoying the way that this whole breakdown of Mark is happening, because I am finding that I'm reading and rereading and rereading, because I will read the assigned 6 or 7 verses, and then I'm like, I want to know what happens. And so I keep reading. And then I find that I'm 3 or 4 days ahead, and then I have to go back, and then I reread that again. And then I find that I'm 3 or 4 days ahead again. And so I'm probably reading most of these passages just over and over again. But every time I do, there's life in them. There's life in God's Word. And we should be expectant of it. And I hope that I can encourage you, whether you are reading it daily or you're missing it 2 or 3 days and then going back and, you know, cramming a massive amount like 21 verses, you know, it doesn't matter, but be in His Word. If you haven't picked these up yet, please, this is the reading for the next quarter, all in one place, and you can follow along. But grab that Bible and open it up now to Genesis chapter 17. In Genesis, God begins to make some very personal declarations and very personal revelations of Himself. We start with the creation of the world and the creation of humanity, and then God's engagement with humanity. And then he comes to a man named Abraham. And he says that he is going to declare himself to Abraham and through Abraham. In chapter 17 of Genesis, verses 1 and 2, and then verse 6, we read this. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty. I am God Almighty. This word, Almighty, is not just, you know, physical strength. And I'm sorry, that's not very impressive. But it's not God just saying, you know, I am just this God of strength. This is actually a Hebrew name. El Shaddai, Shaddai, El Shaddai. This name means the God who knows no lack, the God of complete sufficiency, the God who lacks nothing. That's God as he introduces himself to Abraham in Genesis 17. He says this, I am God who lacks nothing. Now walk before me faithfully. Be blameless, and I will make a covenant between me and you, and I will greatly increase you. Verse 16, and I will make you very fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings will come of you. God comes to him and says, I am God who lacks nothing. Now walk in my ways, and you will see my increase to you, and you will see my increase through you. In Genesis chapter 22, God comes to him, and this is in the context of actually what I just referred to with Russ. God says, I swear by myself that because you have done this, that you have been willing to lay down your own son, that you have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you. And I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. And your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. The God of all sufficiency says to Abraham, walk in my ways. Do as I've spoken to you to do, and I will bless you. But I am not just blessing so that you will be blessed. I am blessing so that that blessing becomes an overflow, that all people will be blessed through you. God reiterates this in Genesis chapter 26. He now repeats it to Abraham's son, Isaac, who was the one that Abraham was willing to lay down. God speaks to Isaac and he says, for to you and your descendants now, I will give all these lands and I will confirm the oath I spoke to your father Abraham. And I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and will give them these lands. And through, underline these words, through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed. Because Abram obeyed me and did everything I required of him. He kept my commands, my decrees, and my instructions. Now in Mark, flip over to Mark chapter 6, and this is Jesus sending out his friends, his disciples, and Jesus essentially is saying to them here, I have the authority to be El Shaddai to you. This is what Jesus says. Look at what happens in verse 7. He calls his disciples to them. He calls them to himself and he begins to send them out two by two. And he gave them authority over unclean spirits and he charged them, verse 8, to take nothing for their journey but a staff. No bread, no bag, no money in their belts. Wear sandals, but don't take an extra tunic. And Jesus said, when you enter a house, stay there until you depart. And if any place won't receive you, they won't listen to you, when you leave, shake off the dust on your feet as a testimony against them. And so they went out and proclaimed that people should repent. They cast out many demons, anointed many with oil who were sick, and healed them. In Matthew's recounting of this same story, Jesus sent out the 12, said, as you go, proclaim the message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not get any gold or silver or copper to take in your belts. No bag for the journey, no extra shirt or sandals or an extra staff, for the worker is worthy of his keep. Wherever you go, search for someone worthy to stay with and stay at the house until you leave. And Jesus, in essence, says to them, I am sending you out. And you are not going on this journey to provide for yourselves. I am the one who is going to provide for you. Jesus says, I will be your provision. Jesus has said that he is co-equal with God, and now he says to his friends, you trust me in this. You imagine that. You're going on a trip. You're going on a journey. Take with yourself no food, no money, no extra garments, no extra sandals, no extra stuff, nothing. I want you to go. You ever been in a situation that you are challenged like that? Most of you know our story of, you know, God's call to us to come here, but there's a part of it that God really challenged us exactly like this. When we made the decision to respond to God and to come into this mystery of coming back to Australia, I began to look at everything. You know, you accumulate a lot of stuff in life. And, you know, we had accumulated cars. We had accumulated house goods. We'd accumulated, you know, a bunch of stuff. And I began to itemize it. I'm thinking, okay, we'll just sell it all and that will give us what we need to go. It'll enable us to have resource when we get there. It'll enable us to, you know, buy our tickets. If this is God calling us, we'll make it happen. As I am itemizing stuff, I feel like God just says to me, as clearly as anything, who's making the way to make this happen, you or me? And I felt like, I'm like, well, of course you are God while I'm itemizing my things. And I felt God speak to my heart, if I'm making the way, then you give it all away. Well, that's dumb. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But we did. We felt God challenge us. We gave away the stuff, except for the little stuff. Because surely we could at least have a garage sale and that's not really going to matter. It'll just give us enough for, you know, to get underway. So we put all these things that were worth not a lot, but we put them all on the driveway and all on the front lawn and we had a garage sale. And a few little trinkety things were picked up by people, and then this lady shows up. And I said hello to her and realized she doesn't speak English. She only speaks Spanish. She's come up from Mexico. I gave her the best Spanish I had, and I, you know, hola, ¿cómo está? You know, hello, how are you? And that was it. And she began to rattle off Spanish to me. And she's looking at all our things on the driveway. And so I thought, wow, I don't know what is happening here and I don't know what to say, but I have a really good friend who speaks fluent Spanish. And so I rang my friend Mike. Actually, I knew another Spanish word because I said to her, momento. One moment. All right, so I call Mike and I said, Mike, I've got this lady here. We're doing our garage sale and I don't know what she's trying to say to me or what she wants, but can you talk to her and then tell me what she said? So I hand the phone to this lady and she talks to my friend Mike and she hands the phone back to me and I said, Mike, what does she need? And Mike says, she needs everything, but she doesn't have any money. And Donna and I are just like, what? Like, are you joking? But we both look at each other and we're just like, okay. And so I get back on the phone to Mike and I'm like, Mike, just find out where she lives and she can have the stuff. And next thing we know, we're bagging everything and we're putting in the back of this truck and it wasn't just like, she came and took it. We had to drive it to her house, you know, and then unload all this stuff. And we're driving back and it's like, wow, really? And God says that He is our provider. And we can so often think that, well, yeah, well, that means He's given me the capacity to provide. And God's going, no. It doesn't always work the way you think it's going to work. What He said to Abraham is, put me first. Obey me, and I will be your sufficiency. But it's not just so you will be blessed, it's so that you will be a blessing. It's never just about being blessed. It's not. I don't care how many doctrines and things people teach about pursuing the blessing. You're missing the point and you're missing the adventure. Jesus says to His disciples, I am sending you out. I will be your sufficiency. Take nothing for the journey. And they come back. You come towards the end of chapter 6. In verse 30, it says, the apostles return to Jesus and they're excited. They start to tell Jesus everything they've seen. I often wonder what Jesus' response was. I think Jesus was kind of like, yeah, I know. I sent you out there. But I think He engages with them and He goes, come on, say it. But they're expecting to get this time to report. Let's look. Verse 30, the apostles returned to Jesus. They told Him everything they'd done and that they'd taught, all the things. One of the other gospel accounts says, and the things they'd seen, that even demons were stripped of their authority. And Jesus says to them, come away. Come by yourselves to a desolate place. Rest a while. For many people were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. And now many saw them going and recognized them, verse 33. And they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And when He went ashore, He saw a great crowd and He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And He began to teach them many things. I believe on that boat trip across, Jesus says, let's go to a desolate place. There would be this buzz in the boat, this excitement. They'd be going, oh yeah, and Andrew, tell him about that thing you saw. And then James is like, oh yeah, that reminds me of what I saw. And this buzz is happening. But slowly that buzz is becoming a murmur. Because they're starting to see people running along the shores and gathering, and when they get there, it is a desolate place, but it is not a deserted place. It's busy with people, and Jesus is moved with compassion. And He says, they're like sheep without a shepherd. And He begins to care for them, and in His compassion, He begins to teach them. I wonder what the demeanor of the disciples is during this time. All their celebration, all of their rejoicing, gradually becoming a resentment because they're not getting what they're expecting. It's easy, you know, when we have expectation and when that expectation shifts, to turn our rejoicing into resentment, our praise into murmuring. And this is what happens, and I will show you in just a moment where this is revealed, that there is a total shift in Jesus' friends' hearts. And then it comes to the point that it's evening and basically the disciples have kind of had enough. And they say, under the pretense of care, it's time that these people leave. They say here, verse 35, it grew late and His disciples come to Jesus and they say, this is a desolate place. Yeah, you're right. But now the hour is late, and it's time for them to leave. Send them away to go into the villages to get themselves something to eat. And Jesus says to them, why don't you give them something to eat? Pause. They have just been telling Jesus how amazing it was that they went out in the authority of God and they had seen provision and they had seen power and they had seen God working in them. But now Jesus says to them, okay, all of that that you're so excited about, let's do a little something with it. All of that blessing, now let's see it bless. And what do? They go, are you kidding me? If we were to spend a month's wages, we're not going to have enough to feed this crowd that has invaded our desolate place. And there's this resentment. They have forgotten the provision that they have seen themselves, and they say, this doesn't even make sense. Just tell them to leave. And Jesus says, no. Let's not work out how much you need. Why don't you go and find how much we have? Now, I don't know how far the disciples went into the crowd, but it says that Andrew, Andrew came back. Actually, it's in Matthew's account that Andrew comes back. Nope, it's in John. John 6. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up and said, well, I found a boy and he's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But how far do we really think that's going to go amongst so many? And I feel like the disciples, like Andrew goes, hey, little, you know, this little boy, I think this little boy's like, hey, I'm in. I got this little snack pack lunch that my mom gave me, but if Jesus wants that, he can have that. And I wonder if the disciples don't just sort of take that and go, thanks, little guy, point made. And Andrew doesn't even look any further. He comes back to Jesus and goes, that's what we've got. Now tell him to leave. But Jesus goes, I reckon Jesus just looks at the little guy and goes, thanks. And then he says to the disciples, now have him sit down. What do you think is going on in the disciples' hearts? There's this resentment that has been brewing away, and now Jesus says to these 12, now organize them. Have them sit down. And it says, Jesus prayed a blessing, and he began to distribute food. And he gives this abundance, not just to the people, but he again gives it to his disciples to give to the people. Blessed to what? Be a blessing. Given that you might give. And Jesus, the El Shaddai moment where he declares that he is God who has authority to provide, then says to his disciples, you're still a part of this. And they distribute the food and it says everyone ate till they were full. Why? Because of the generosity of this one little boy that doesn't just keep it to himself. He didn't look at his snack and go, man, I better hide that or they're going to just raid me. He just openly holds it out and says, here, start with that, give that. He never looked at his lunch and compared it to the thousands of people sitting on the hillside. He looked at what he had and I think he looked at Jesus. The El Shaddai, the sufficient God. The God who knows no lack. Here, take my little barley loaves and my little fish and do whatever you want to do with them. And then Jesus, when they've all eaten to their full, he says to his disciples, now I want you to go and pick up the pieces. And how much do they pick up? 12 baskets full. The all-sufficiency of God, the all-sufficient one, Jesus, the statement to those disciples in their resentment, in their, you know, in their anger, in their moaning and complaining is almost like Jesus goes, really, guys? After everything that I just showed myself mighty and strong on your behalf in, you thought that there wasn't enough of me for you as well? And it's declared their arms are full. They've now got their own basket when they didn't even have two barley loaves of their own. And Jesus says, you think I'm not all sufficient? But what is amazing is what happens directly after this. It says here, immediately, verse 45, immediately, he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. He doesn't want his disciples dismissing the crowd. He's given them their basket and said, on your way. So they take their basket and they get in their boat and they head out on the water. And they're not halfway across and this storm just whips up. And now their little baskets of bread are floating in the water in the bottom of the boat, and the bread's soggy, and the fish is falling apart in the water, and they're complaining more than ever. How do we know that they're complaining? Let's keep reading there. After he had taken leave of the crowds, Jesus went on the mountain to pray, and when evening came, the boat was out on the sea. He was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea, and he intended to pass by them. I've read that before and I'm gone, why did Jesus do this thing where he's walking out across the lake? They're struggling in the wind. He is walking and he just intends to walk by them. It seems like this weird thing until you realize what's happening in the boat. Look at what's happening in the boat. They saw him. They were terrified. They thought they'd seen a ghost, and they cry out, and he speaks to them, and he says, take heart, it's me. Don't be afraid. He got in the boat with them. The wind ceased. They were utterly astonished. Verse 52, for they did not understand about what? The loaves. They're still talking about the bread. And it says, but their hearts were hardened. They have gone from this rejoicing into resentment, into this hard heart in the boat that they are still talking about the bread. And I feel like Jesus walking on the water comes and he goes, you know what? You can have your little in the boat, and I'm just going to keep walking. They're in the boat. They don't understand the bread, it says, and their hearts are hardened. I don't know. There's bread floating around. Their little baskets are now soaked, and the bread's wasted, and you know, they're griping about that. And, you know, what was that with the bread? He could have just delivered it to them himself. But he made us go and deliver it. Can you believe that? And then he made us go and pick up all the pieces. And now we've got all those pieces and they're wrecked as well. And they're just, how do you write that? They're just complaining and groaning. They're just moaning, and Jesus just goes, have it. I'm just going to keep walking. He intends to pass them by. I wonder how many times that Jesus has passed by when we're resentful and complaining and moaning and groaning that he hasn't done what we expected him to do, and he hasn't done what he should have done, and he made me do this and that. He took me through this. He took me through that. And Jesus just goes, you know what? Have at that, because I'm going to keep walking. You know, I think this little boy that gave of his bread and gave of his fish, in all of this, I think he understood the heart of the God of his forefather Abraham, who said, I've blessed you that you might be a blessing. And he doesn't feel overwhelmed. He just looks at a crowd and his bread and he goes, I'm blessed. I'm going to be a blessing. I'm going to put it in the hands of God who's sufficient. And he doesn't know what the future's going to be. He doesn't know if he's going home with an empty tummy. But he puts it in his hand. And the disciples have forgotten really about the generosity and the all-sufficiency of God. And it's much easier to want Jesus to do things in us or to us. Let the blessing be to me. But we really struggle when it has to come through me. I'm happy with the to me. I'm happy for your favor to be upon me, that I know your sufficiency and I know your power working in me, and I'm seeing all that. But now you've asked me to be the one that's going to bless, to be the overflow. We go, ooh. Like the to me, but not the through me. You ever struggle with it? Ever feel like God says, I want you to, and we go, oh, yeah, I wish I could. Wish I was in different circumstances. Little boy going, oh, yeah, I wish I could, but yeah, I can't. You see, my dad's not the local fisherman. My parents don't run the local bakery. I don't have any more than this. I just got this. No. And it's a struggle. It's hard. But Jesus declares himself and shows physically his authority as the all-sufficient one. I think he shows himself sufficient on our behalf when our hearts are open. Generosity, the generosity of this little boy is never about an amount. It's about an attitude. The coming to the all-sufficient one is not our sufficiency at any level. It is his sufficiency. Generosity has always been about a posture of being open-handed, not a closed fist, evaluating how generous I think I can be. It's interesting, recorded in Mark a little later, and we'll come to it in this quarter, when Jesus is actually watching offerings at the temple. And he says there's heaps of people with lots of resource coming and throwing money, and then this lady comes with a little pittance and puts it in, and Jesus just goes, wow, 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 wait a minute. Now that is generosity. Because all these people are giving out of their abundance, but she gave out of her need. A little boy who doesn't give out of his abundance, he gives out of his own need. Jesus was always about releasing. The God who is also always sufficient is about the flow, not the reservoir. Often we want the provision before the obedience. If I see it in my hand, then I will act. But generosity is a heart attitude long before resource or abundance is there. And it's also a willingness that's tried, it's tested. I'm going to read, and let me say this. If you think this is a message about giving, quiet the little in your boat for a minute. Let me just say that. I just feel for a moment you need to not allow yourself to just go, this is going to be about giving. Shh. Let me finish this. Malachi chapter 3. God actually takes this as an issue. Will a mere mortal rob God? Yet you rob me. And you ask, how are you robbing me? Well, let me tell you, in your tithes and in your offerings. Because of it, you're under a curse. You, your whole nation. The tithe was simply a statement of putting God first. That's what it was about. And God says this, he goes, the problem is, and the reason you're under this curse, is that you have put yourselves first above me in everything. The problem is when we elevate ourselves above him, you're robbing me. Bring the tithe. The tithe was always this first 10% portion of everything that God blessed someone with. Bring it into the storehouse that there'd be food in my house. And then God says, test me in it. Test me in it. And see that I don't throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there's not enough room to even store it. I'll prevent pests from devouring your crops. Vines in your fields will drop. I will stop the vines in your fields from dropping their fruit before it's ripe. And the nations will call you blessed, for yours will be a delightful land. And God says, get it in order. I am the all-sufficient one. I am El Shaddai. I am the one who provides. And the first portion was always to be this recognition as God, you are my provider. It was never just this dollar value amount or crop value amount. It was a percentage thing that was just you make that statement. And the way God does it is he absolutely says this in the context of trust me. Now, if you think I'm talking about giving, let me tell you where my heart is on that topic. I believe in giving. In fact, people say, oh, tithing, that's an Old Testament principle. Yes, it is an Old Testament principle. It's actually liberated in the New Testament to hilarious giving. It's no longer limited to 10%. It's a liberty. We are liberated to do whatever we want to do to make our statement that God, you're first. And listen to me, please. That is not measured by what's in these boxes. That's not my interest. I'm not standing here saying, bring money and put it in the boxes here. What I'm saying is God has declared himself as our provider and we should honor him as such and be a people who are generous. Wherever you believe that statement of God is most made through your generosity, do it. If you don't believe that you're to be a part of the work of Good Life, then don't make that your excuse to say, I don't do the tithe thing. You don't get who God is. Be generous somewhere. I'm not begging for your 10% to come here. I'm begging for your 10% to honor God wherever you believe God needs honoring and his kingdom advancing. If you feel like you want to be a part of, you know, the Good Life stories, etc., then good. Bring your 10%. Do that here. But don't do it out of guilt. Don't do it because, oh man, Tim, what a jerk. He made me feel bad. That is not my point. Please hear me. What happens here is the disciples allow this rejoicing to turn into resentment that turns into this place of their murmuring and a hardened heart until Jesus says, I am not content to leave you in that space. And he climbs into the boat and he declares his authority over nature, and we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. He declares his authority and they are astonished. And there are times that Jesus like just reveals himself, and there are other times that he has to correct us. you know, again, it's not so you give here. I choose to put my own tithe here because, you know what, I see the stories week after week. I'm so stoked that probably part of offering I give helps keep that pool running. And you know what I'm having the unbelievable honor of right now? Is teaching this beautiful, I won't use the word old because older lady to swim. And every time I get in that water, and we're working through things, and I get to stand there and go, you know what? I believe in a God who loves you and cares about you more than just your ability to swim. He cares about your history. He cares about your heart and your mind and your healing. And can we just pray for that? And I end up standing in the waters. If my tithe is putting chlorine in that water that I can see this beautiful lady's heart change, then throw chlorine in the water that I might see His kingdom advance one person at a time. That's what the kingdom is about. And if you feel like your 10% portion should go to Varna, give it to Varna with rejoicing. With that liberty of heart that says, man, I believe in the work of rescuing orphans. If it's to go to Milk and Honey and you know, and the global mini markets that are happening in a week and a bit, bring your tithe and spend it for the glory of God and the distribution in the nations. I don't care where you bring it. Is God your El Shaddai? Do we trust that Jesus is able to do more than we ask or think or imagine, that we become an extension of His kingdom and now I'm all worked up? This is the stuff that, like, I'm... No, I just... The stories of the kingdom advancing is what excites me. I want to see the kingdom advance, buoyed by a people that recognize who God is and are surrendered to Him, that He would bless us, that we might be a blessing, that we might be the overflow of that abundance, that His name would be declared as the faithful God who knows no lack, who loves us, who provides for us, that in every season You are still God. Whether I am in a desert and I'm giving of my pittance, whether I am in abundance and I'm giving of joyous overflow, whatever the way I'm living my life, let it be to His honor. We're going to close singing a song and we are out of here. But there's this song which I just think is so powerful. We opened with it, and so I just asked Geordie to bookend the service with it. It says this: You are my supply. You're my breath of life. But You're still more awesome than I know. You are my reward. You're worth living for, but You're still more awesome than I know. You are my sacrifice of greatest price, but You're still more awesome than I know. You're my coming King, and You're my everything, and You're still more awesome than I know. And all of You is more than enough for all of me, for every thirst, for every need. I'm just going to ask that we can stand together. And God's word may be an encouragement to us, and I hope it is. It strengthens us, but sometimes it has to. It's a word that just shapes us and challenges us and calls us onward. But let's live a life and live it in this statement that says, God, You are the one who is more than enough for me, for everything that I face. And I choose to put You first. I choose to put you above all things. I choose to declare you over the circumstances I'm in, good or bad, sufficiency, lack, whatever you sense you're in. Let's begin to sing this. You are my supply.